This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm superstar Frank Morano. I have three siblings. They're technically half siblings because we have the same father, but different mothers. But, you know, I view them, you know, the same as you would any sibling that you have. And, you know, I think we're pretty close. But the three of them are definitely, I think, probably closer than they are to me. Probably. I say that, you know, I mean, look, I have my moments where I'm close with all of them, but that's not because I don't share the same, you know, parentage technically that they have. It's because there is a significant difference in our age. My brother Nick is 10 years younger than me. My brother Alex is about 11 and a half years younger than me. And my sister Claudia, I think, is about 13 years younger than me, roughly. So and I love them all dearly. Now, you know, they're all adults. So we all converse and discuss things with one another as if we're adults. But sometimes, especially these days that we're all pretty much on the same plane, I have to remind myself how young they are, because I'll reference something that I remember as if it happened like it was yesterday. And in their case, they were either not born yet or they were just a child. Other than that, I don't know that these days that difference in age really matters much. I don't. I mean, there are certain cultural, you know, we're technically, I think, parts of different generations, and there's certain cultural attributes that different generations have. And, you know, I'm sure I have my generational characteristics and they have theirs. But once you're over the age of 21, right, or 30, I'll say. I'll stick with 21. Once you're over the age of 21, everyone's an adult, right? So I don't really view them differently these days, but I read a very interesting article on MSN.com written by Marie Holmes. Headline, it's from the Huffington Post originally. Headline, "My siblings and I have an unusual age gap. Here's what it's like." And she writes that her younger and only sibling is 20 years younger than her and 2 years older than her child. They're in the same high school right now. Now, that is really interesting. And she said that's actually not her. That's somebody that she quoted, that's quoted in this article. And it got me wondering about age gaps between people. If you have a significant age gap with a brother or a sister, what that is like growing up. Because obviously, growing up, it was a big difference. You know, when my brother Nick was 4 or 5 and I was a teenager, we're not really sharing common interests. We still spent a lot of time together, but it was almost like I was a kind of an uncle or a babysitter. But that's certainly not the case now. You know, my brother Nick's married and, you know, we do all the things that adult children do. But this writer, Marie Holmes, writes that that she had a significant age gap And they asked Huffington Post readers to share experiences with siblings who were notably far apart in age, or they asked for people that were close together in age. So one person writes about her sister being 14 years older than her. And she was born at the end of her eighth grade year. She could have chosen to ignore her. But instead, they worked hard to build a relationship between them. And she says she waited 14 long years for a sister, and it was worth it. That's nice. That's Ann Bronkowski in Chicago. Monty Barb writes, my closest sibling is 8 years older than me. Oldest sibling was 26 years older. I learned a lot about life skills and was mature for my age. I missed having a playmate, though. I know some people that have wide disparities in age. I know one group of siblings that I think there are 13 of them. And there are significant differences in age between, you know, the older ones and the younger ones. And I honestly don't think in that particular family that they have much of a relationship. In my wife's family, there's 9 of them, right? My wife's one of 9, but they're all actually relatively close in age. They're all just about a year and a half apart. So I think the oldest is around 40. And the youngest is around 26, 27, thereabouts. So that's not that huge. I mean, look, between the oldest one and the youngest one, there's a big age difference, but most of them are pretty close in age to the other. So I'm curious what experience you've had if you have a sibling that is far different in age than where you are. And I'm talking more than 8 years, I think, 9 years, 10 years. You know, I think 10 years or more, because these days, I don't think there's any difference. But when we were growing up, obviously there were. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222, because that's something that parents often worry about what the right age gap is between siblings. There are financial concerns, like the cost of having two children in daycare or in diapers. There's logistical ones, like how to handle drop off and pick up at more than one school, or how many car seats you have room for in the back now. So every potential age gap has its own benefits and challenges. And as is so often the case with parenting, you really don't necessarily have a lot of control over the situation. Sometimes babies arrive sooner than planned. Sometimes they arrive later than planned. So curious if you have an age gap with your sibling, how that's worked out, or if you're the parent of children that have a significant age gap, how that has worked out. Meanwhile, Lara Logan was on Steve Bannon's show talking about the bridge collapse. And again, I want to reiterate that I think this was an accident. I don't think it was terrorism or a Chinese attack or anything along those lines. But Lara Logan had an interesting theory.
This is what you call death by a thousand cuts. It is an absolutely catastrophic attack on critical infrastructure, and you cannot see it because a cyber attack is unseen. Just like the attack on 2020 on the voting machine that you cannot see.
I am not seeing that at all. I mean, that the way that the articles about this were written, it's a little bit different than what she actually said, and that's why you have to play the audio rather than just rely upon written descriptions. But I definitely am not seeing that it's a cyber attack. But who knows? Who knows? I'm open-minded. I'm absolutely open-minded. 800-848-9222. Karine Jean-Pierre was doing a radio interview with Mark Garrison. Karine Jean-Pierre is the White House press secretary. Karine Jean-Pierre was doing this radio interview with Mark Garrison on WBT in Charlotte. And the news director asked what I thought was a very fair and appropriate question. She asked, you know, the news director asked, he asked about President Biden's mental faculties. Now, don't you have to think this is a question if you're a Biden surrogate, either for the government or for the campaign, that it's a question that's going to come up? So listen to the question and listen to Karine Jean-Pierre's response.
When I told a number of people that I was talking to you today, it was interesting, though. They all said, would you please just ask her, does the president have dementia? And so before I move on from that, does he?
Mark, I can't even believe you're asking me this question. That is a credibly offensive question to ask.
But you know people ask it.
No. Mark, you're taking us down this rabbit hole.
It's an offensive and unfair question? I don't think it's offensive and unfair at all. You can ask me if I have dementia. I will promise you I will not be offended. I may have dementia because I was having difficulty following where the conservationist party was going, or why Robert in Suffolk wants to force a sale of TikTok, but he thinks the bill to force a sale of TikTok is un-American. So you can ask me. I might answer yes. I might answer no. I'm not going to be offended. Such a weird response. You know, I remember I love Albert Brooks, and I'm really looking forward to seeing that documentary about him. I still haven't gotten around to seeing it. But one of my favorite Albert Brooks movies is The Muse with Sharon Stone and Andy McDowell. And it's a wonderful cast. And Albert Brooks is married to Andy McDowell in the movie. And he's concerned, Albert Brooks is concerned, that his wife is getting a little too cozy with Sharon Stone's character. So he asks Andy McDowell, his wife, are you sleeping with her? And she says, oh, I can't even believe you would ask that. I'm not going to dignify that with a response. And Albert Brooks's character says, dignify it with a no. That's the way I feel about that question. Question's not offensive. It's not even surprising. Answer? No. No. I mean, it was a very bizarre response.
When I told a number of people that I was talking to you today, it was interesting, though. They all said, would you please?
By the way, this fella doesn't exactly sound like a hostile interviewer. He sounds like a pretty friendly guy, both in general and to her. I don't know why she's getting all defensive.
When I told a number of people that I was talking to you today, it was interesting, though. They all said, would you please just ask her, does the president have dementia? And so before I move on from that, does he?
Mark, I can't even believe you're asking me this question. That is a credibly offensive question to ask.
But you know people ask it.
No. You're taking us down this rabbit hole.
All right. 800-848-9222. I'm curious what it's like if you're part of a sibling group with a significant age gap, or if you are the parent of children that have a significant age gap between them. Greg is in Brooklyn. Hello, Greg.
Hey, how are you doing? Good morning, I guess.
Absolutely.
My sister and I grew up with 3 to 4 years, roughly, gap with us. And we didn't become close until like high school, because we had a lot more in common. And as adults, obviously, we're much more closer. But that small gap benefited me as a male, because I got to hang out with her friends. You know what I mean?
So you were the younger? You were the younger?
Yes, I was.
Gotcha.
Yep,
okay.
Absolutely. Now, with my kids, my oldest and my youngest have 12 years between the two of them, and they honestly, they're like strangers. And I get it. I get it, because there's really not much in common. But the middle one with my oldest, there's a 4 or 5 year gap there, and they get along swimmingly. I mean, they play games together because it's a tighter gap, so they can connect better. And it's just amazing watching this. It's sad, because I want my little guy to know his older brother, but you kind of can't control that.
Right. Right. Exactly. So do you, with the age gap between your kids, do you find that you do anything differently, either because of the difference in their ages or because of the difference in your age when one child was 3 versus when the other was 3? Do you treat them different at the same age at all?
Yes, absolutely. My oldest kid actually gets pissed at me sometimes. He says, "Dad, how can you discipline me differently?" And I tell him, I said, "You were the first. You were the experiment. Mm-hmm. You were mm-hmm. you. I was rolling the dice on you. I learned from you. And so I adjust the way I do things with the little one now because I see what worked with you and what didn't work with you." And he does feel as if I'm being kind of prejudicial to him slightly, you know, with the treatment. And I don't know how you really... He's not going to get it until he's a parent himself.
Sure, sure.
You know, so there are definitely differences, and the kids see it.
Yeah, Greg, thank you. That's exactly kind of the insight that I was looking for, like what this is like as a parent to parent such a wide age gap. 800-848-9222. Joe is in the Queens. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, hi, Frank. Before I get to the siblings, that thing with McDowell, someone could just give an absurd answer. Yeah, that. I'm with that person and five others. That could be also a response. But, yeah, two things I want to bring up. One, I have a sister that's a little bit more than 8 years younger. And I see now she's got a very aggressive streak. She does triathlons. And a high tolerance for, she's in health management, for things just roll off. She can tolerate a lot of stress. And I did not see that at all when she was younger, which is interesting. Another story is I have a brother that's a year younger. He's telling me now how he's pitched. This is in Little League and struck out 17 out of 18 batters. He did give up one hit.
Wow.
I knew the guy. But here's the catch. You're telling me this now. At that age, I was getting the sporting news as a subscription and following minor league statistics all the way to single A, and I would have been interested in that. So the moral of the story is sometimes even siblings, if they don't tell you something, you just don't know. You know what I mean? If they don't share it with you, that you're not going to know.
Yeah. No, I think that's that makes perfect sense, Joe. Joe, thank you. 800-848-9222. Roger in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Hi, Roger.
Yeah, hi, thanks. My mother-in-law had five children over a span of 23 years.
Whoa. So how old, the oldest is 23 and the, you know, there's a 23-year age gap between them? The oldest and the youngest?
Yeah, between the oldest and the youngest. And my wife was born right smack in the middle. So for instance, the eldest sister was 12 years older than her, and her older brother was 10 years older than her. And the funny thing is, looking at the visit to see Santa Claus, they look like my wife's parents behind her when it was really the older brother and sister. The next younger was 7 years younger than my wife. And there was a little bit of sibling rivalry there because my wife was the princess with stacks and stacks of black and white photos in between her. But my wife and the youngest, my wife got along very well with the eldest and the youngest. But just like a big family. That's about the way it was.
So given your wife's experience, it doesn't sound like the age was necessarily an obstacle to them having a close and warm relationship.
No, I don't think so. I don't quite think so for some reason, because my wife and the eldest sister stayed in close contact over the years, even though they were miles apart. And the youngest, the only problem friction it was between my wife and the one 7 years younger than her. And I believe it was probably my wife's fault.
Look, every relationship, I'm sure there are different sides to every story about
it.
Go ahead.
Okay. I just want to make one other comment. You know, if you're a 12-year-old, 6 years is half of your life.
Right.
When you're a 50-year-old, 6 years is like nothing. It's a proportionate aspect. I just wanted to throw that in.
You know, it's a good point because the gentleman that was just on talked about how he and his sister were 4 years apart. And to me, 4 years is nothing, right? But when you're 12 and 8, 4 years is everything. When you're you know, 6 and 10, that's a huge difference. And that's kind of the way I feel about my siblings now. When my brother Nick was 5 and I was 15, big difference. But now that everybody's, you know, an adult, who cares? It doesn't make any difference. I get exactly what you're saying, Roger. Thank you. Renee is in New Jersey. Hi, Renee.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know that my little brother is 13 years younger than me, so I can relate to what you're discussing.
So are you guys whole siblings, both of the same parents?
Yes.
And do you guys have other siblings in between the two of you?
We did. Unfortunately, my sister is deceased, but she was 5 years younger than me, so 8 years older than him. But now he and I are best friends. So when
do you think your relationship changed from being, being on a different plane, meaning one person is a little bit more adult and the other person is more like a child, to everybody being on the same plane? What point in your relationship did that change?
I think it happened somewhere, I was in my early 30s. And so, you know, that would put him in his late teens. And there was like a little bit of a switch that got flipped. And I think it had something to do with we were both leaders in a young adults church group. And the relationship just kind of grew from there. And we were co-leading. And interesting twist, a young guy came to that group. And I thought he was closer to my age, had a crush on him. Fell in love with him. And when I told my little brother that I liked this guy, he said, "You can't like him. He's my age." And then I wound up marrying him. So I wound up, my husband is also 13 years younger than me. And it's pretty funny because he and my brother are best friends. And it's just,
I love that.
What do you know?
How did that work out, the age gap between you and your husband?
Well, it's interesting because I thought maybe it would get better as I got older, but I feel it's gotten a little worse, you know, because when men age, they age in a very dignified manner and everything looks great on a man as they get older, I feel. And, you know, I think a woman, a little bit of a different story. We have to do a little bit more work to stay young looking. So I do feel as if that age gap is expanding, where he will tell me that he doesn't see it, he doesn't get it, he doesn't ever think about it. So he's kind of wonderful about it, but you know, I actually don't like the comments that people say, "Oh, you know, you snatched a young one," or "you're a cougar," or all that crap. I hate that. I was just a girl that wanted to get married. And, you know, my husband happened to be much younger than me. Never expected it. You know what's cool, though? We look the same age, or he even looks a little bit older than me. So I think that helps.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, that's wonderful. Yeah. Hey, Renee, thanks for sharing all that. I appreciate that.
Sure.
I'm sorry about your sister's passing, but I appreciate you,
thank you.
Giving me your perspective on that. Appreciate that. Thank you. That's a nice lady. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. David is in the Boogie Down Bronx. Hi, David.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
My comment is going back to the interview or clip that you played of the press secretary being interviewed by that gentleman.
Mm-hmm. Let me, in case people, because this is an hour where a lot of people are just waking up. Let me play it again, just in case people haven't heard it.
When I told a number of people that I was talking to you today, it was interesting, though. They all said, "Would you please just ask her, does the president have dementia?" And so before I move on from that, does he?
Mark, I can't even believe you're asking me this question. That is a credibly offensive question to ask.
But you know people ask it.
You're taking us down this rabbit hole.
What do you think, David?
All right. What bothers me about that question is, and because the insinuation when you ask someone a question like that is that the person definitely has dementia. People call into this station all the time. They call into other stations acting like they have a definitive diagnosis that President Biden has Alzheimer's or something. There is no evidence of that. President Biden appears to me to be a typical 81-year-old man. That is how the average 81-year-old person is. William Shatner, who is much older, appears to be in much better condition than either President Trump or President Biden. I think I mentioned that to you on Facebook. However, I wouldn't ask that to President Trump. If I walked up to President Trump or one of his people, I wouldn't say, "Well, you know, I think President Trump has dementia. Does he?" That's an offensive question. I don't understand why you can't see that.
But David, why?
That would be like me walking up to you, Frank, and you've had missteps. Oh, Frank, do you have dementia? It sounds like there's something wrong with you.
Right.
That's a terrible thing to ask somebody.
So, David, I wouldn't be offended if you asked the question, though, about me or anything else. And it doesn't have to be dementia. It could be anything. Any sort of thing that would lead to, malapropism. You know how many times I've been accused of being drunk? When I wasn't drunk because I have this reputation as someone that drinks a lot. And if you ask me if I'm drunk, I'll either say yes or no. I'm not going to say, how dare you? I can't believe you would ask the question. Why is it an offensive question, though? That's what I don't get.
Okay. I think it goes to context, though. If you're behaving normally, like you are right now, you should be insulted if someone asked you if you were drunk. If you're behaving like you're drunk, that's different. I mean, listen, you had one on the other day, the one that was talking about the Mandela effect. Now, in my opinion, she sounded like she was either drunk or high. Now, I wouldn't call in and ask her that because that would be offensive. I think there's a time and a place for everything. I think when you're talking to the press secretary, who is a government employee, by the way, but that's not the appropriate question to ask under those circumstances. That's all I'm saying.
Now, let me just end with this,
no,
David.
Go ahead.
The fact that he says towards the end there that a lot of people are raising that question, you would acknowledge that that's true, right? That the people are, and I know you think it's all politically motivated, but there are people bringing up that prospect of dementia. So doesn't that make it just the fact that people are wondering about this? Doesn't that, you know, it almost reminds me of when, you know, Donald Trump and others were all saying that Barack Obama wasn't really born in this country or something along those lines. I think people were asking the question, and I don't think there'd be anything wrong with asking, you know, one of Barack Obama's press secretaries if he was born in this country. Would that be offensive?
Okay. But again, there was no foundation for that. And if you remember, Obama resisted for a long time before he provided his birth certificate to finally quiet that down. Now, President Biden could do a, some type of cognitive exam or whatever to put this to rest if he wanted to.
Right.
I think, let me tell you something. Let's be honest with each other. Both of these gentlemen are too old to be running for president, both of them. In an ideal world, Biden would realize that, and he thinks he's the only person that could beat Donald Trump, which is why he's actually in the race. If Donald Trump wasn't in this race, I think President Biden wouldn't be running. That's the truth. And I really wish both of them would step back and let a younger generation run for office, because let's be clear. Both of these gentlemen are too old. There are serious doubts about both of their mental fitness, and we should be honest with each other about that.
Interesting. Hey, David, thank you. Hey, you know, I may bring this up tomorrow with, I think we're going to be joined by Michael Smirkanish tomorrow, which I'm very excited about. He's got this new thing called the Mingle Project that he is promoting, which I'm all about. I'm actually going to try and go see him when he comes to my area, but it's basically a way to get folks of different political persuasions talking again. And that's exactly what I'm trying to do. So I may ask him about this tomorrow if he's kind enough to come on the show. So we're working on that. Sophia is in Brooklyn. Hello, Sophia.
Hey, Frank. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning. So I'm the youngest of eight children, and there's a 21 age gap between myself and my eldest sister.
Wow.
And when my mom was expecting me, my eldest sister was getting married. So it was like two different generations, you know, and all the ages in between. So like the first four were of one generation, and the last four, you know, myself included, were like of another generation. And we actually, like, what it was pretty interesting, because the older ones had, they had a whole life, you know, experience and memories, and I wasn't even born yet. So there's like things that they knew that I was not part of. It was like, it was a little odd at times, and vice versa. You know, they were like way older than me, so I was in school while they were already married and having families. Now my eldest sister, who's deceased about a year now, she had a daughter that was 5 years younger than me, and I actually grew up closer with her, more like a sister relationship with my niece than my, you know, than her mother, my sister. So it was pretty interesting.
You know, that
made for a colorful life, you know, and holidays and everything.
I can imagine. That does sound interesting. You know, my Uncle Carmine, who was my grandfather's brother, he was the youngest. I think he was... maybe about, I think he was also about 10 years younger than his other siblings. And I never really talked to him about that age gap. He passed away, but he had a similar age gap as the one that you're describing. And I just wonder what that's like. And I think your perspective, Sophia, of having in some respects more in common with your, I think it was your niece, you said, than your sister. It's interesting. It's just interesting. It's not good or bad. Just interesting. 800-848-9222. Noam Leiden is here. We will talk with him straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is Greg Kelly. To my friends in the construction business, if you've been injured on the job, make just one call to the construction accident lawyers at the law offices of Darren T. Moore. With hundreds of five-star reviews, they fight for more justice for every client and have secured millions of dollars in compensation for New York construction workers. Call 888-444-ATTY. That's 888-444-2889 for a free consultation. More diligence, more persistence, and more justice.
Prior results don't guarantee similar outcomes.
It's the Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Preacher's son, and when his daddy would visit, he'd come along. When they gathered around and started talking, Cousin Billy would take me walking. Out through the backyard we go walking. Then he'd look into my eyes. Lord knows to my surprise, the only one.
Dusty Springfield, I love this song. You know who else loves this song? Quentin Tarantino, who is celebrating his birthday today. And, you know, I really enjoy Quentin Tarantino's films, you know, some more than others. But the thing that I'm not joking here, the thing I like best about these Quentin Tarantino films is the music. You watch any of these Quentin Tarantino films, and it is worth seeing them just for the music. So little did I know that Quentin Tarantino shares a birthday with not only my wife, but my Aunt Madeline, who is 5 years older than her brother, who happens to be my dad. And I don't get the sense that that 5-year gap, you know, played much of a role in their upbringing one way or another. Someone that knows all about age gaps, siblings, and upbringing is Noam Leiden.
Stand by for the Other Side of Midnight's news.
City, the Other Side of Midnight and its affiliated stations present national and international news with Frank Morano and news director Noam Leiden. Their summary of the world news and personal comments. Get the rest of the story.
Hey there, Noam.
Good morning, Frank. This story kind of got buried with everything that's happened over the last 24 hours, but it is big news. Out of Florida, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signing this bill in the Sunshine State that'll make it almost impossible for anyone under 15 years old to get their own Instagram or any other social media account, for that matter, beginning January 1st of next year. The thought is the lawmakers in Florida say that social media is poisoning the minds of teenagers, playing on their mental health. And so beginning next year, unless you have parental consent, you will not be able to create your own Instagram account. from, I should say, 14 and under. There was a lot of back and forth in the final moments before this bill was signed into law. DeSantis wanted it to be so that even parental consent would not get someone on, but he had to give in because lawmakers said, no, hey, if a parent says okay, they should be able to have the right to do that. But this is the first bill of its kind and pretty restrictive that we've seen anywhere in the nation. There's been other states and cities. Here in New York City, the mayor has talked about doing something similar as well, saying that the way these systems, these social media platforms are set up are to suck young kids in who don't have the mind or the mindset to be able to pull themselves away from what they're seeing, and they're seeing things they shouldn't be seeing. And so now in Florida, unless the parent gives the exclusive rights, the rights to, for these teenagers to go on, teens won't have their own Instagram account. They won't. Well, they're not really on Facebook anymore. But any of the other social media platforms, they will not be able to set up accounts.
I've read, first of all, with respect to Facebook, that the young people use Facebook not to do social networking, but they use it to shop.
That's right.
Apparently, Facebook Marketplace is the thing that the young people use to order things and to buy things.
That's right. And also, there's a couple big shows that are on Facebook, and
so they'll
sign on to watch those shows as well. Yeah.
But, I'm surprised that DeSantis would go so far in terms of even prohibiting people to do this if they have parental consent. That, to me, makes no sense. What they came up with strikes me as a pretty good balance. If the parent says it's okay, why not let them have an Instagram page? If they don't, then they don't.
Yeah, I think it makes sense, too. There is going to be they've already mounted a legal campaign, to stop this from happening. You have some civil rights activists, who say, hey, you're going too far. You're taking away these kids' rights, so that they do have some rights as well. So we'll see if any of that, beats back this rule, this law that's going to begin January 1. But it doesn't look like it will. It looks like this will happen January 1st, and it'll be interesting to see if other states, cities across the nation follow suit.
That will be interesting. I'm curious to see where that goes.
Would-be assassin John Hinckley Jr. He says that he is a victim of cancel culture. I don't know if you noticed, he's out from behind bars,
right,
if you didn't know
a
that.
Musician.
If you don't know the story, he tried to assassinate Ronald Reagan.
And he did shoot James Brady.
Yeah. He's out from behind bars, and while he has been out from behind bars, apparently he has taken up the guitar, maybe even played before he was involved in the assassination, and he's come out with two different albums. The second album came out last summer, and he wanted to begin a tour of different clubs across the country, and some clubs actually had put him on the bill that you could see John Hinckley Jr. play in concert. And then what would happen, and this happened in New York, nearby in Connecticut, he was supposed to do a show on March 30th. So March 30th would have been 40 years to the day after he shot Reagan. Oh, he was set to do a concert at this club in Naugatuck, Connecticut. Whether the club owners knew that was the actual date of the assassination attempt, we don't know. But when people in the neighborhood, or around the country for that matter, found out that this nightclub was going to host John Hinckley Jr. for a concert, they were outraged. And so that's what's happened in each of these clubs that he's signed on to. He's had like 30 club dates where he's signed these deals for the club dates, and then they've been canceled by the club owners when people find out that it's him that's set to perform. But what's amazing is he has a following. This is his latest single.
This is my latest original song.
If that's your type of thing, he's folk music, and that's what he's into.
Yeah, I mean, I think that can be described as, at best, okay.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's not that good, honestly, I don't think.
Maybe you can say sort of the sick part, and maybe this is me editorializing, is that people want to see him just because of who he is, not because of what he sings.
Well, and so that's what I was going to say. So there is nobody more opposed to cancel culture than me. I'm against everybody boycotting people. I'm against people losing their job because they use the wrong word to describe some things. I'm against people, being thrown out of a restaurant because of a joke they told 25 years ago. I'm against every aspect of cancel culture. And we talked about this with respect. We talked about this yesterday with respect to Sean P. Diddy Combs, because now he's involved in this sex trafficking investigation. And I brought up the question, are people still going to listen to his music? Still going to play it on the radio? And, you know, he's not been charged with anything yet, but that question still applies to people like R. Kelly, to Bill Cosby, O.J. Simpson. And I think it's fine to patronize all that stuff. Here's the difference, right? All of those people were artists that then got canceled or did something bad, which resulted in them being castigated by society. In the case of John Hinckley Jr., he seems like he's using his notoriety and his name recognition to launch a music career, whereas anybody with his level of talent would never be successful.
Well, 100%. No two ways about it.
Right. So I think there's... I don't think it is cancel culture. I think he's trying to benefit from crime groupies.
Yeah, honestly. And maybe shame on these club owners who thought they could make a buck after him off of him because they knew who he was. And they only canceled when people came to them and said, hey, you know, why are you having somebody who tried to kill Ronald Reagan at your club? And by the way, there's also a record label that has signed him. And he has this new he has physical albums that you can buy. And apparently they've gone pretty fast. People have bought them.
I think a lot of it is people buying it as a novelty act. I mean, it's like people buying, a Louis Farrakhan Calypso record. They're buying it because it's Farrakhan. They're not buying it because it's so great at Calypso music. And the other thing with respect to Hinckley's music career, and look, he's out. I don't want him to not be able to do anything. And if he wants to produce art, that's fine. If he was performing under a different name, if he had a stage name that wasn't immediately calling attention to him trying to assassinate a president and him leaving a man maimed for the rest of his life, I could deal with this a little bit more. If he was performing as DJ Smith or something, that would almost be okay. But it seems to me that the only reason anybody would see him is because he tried to kill Reagan.
Yeah. It is.
It's amazing. I don't like that at all.
Yeah. So anyway, these clubs, none of them. So far, he has no club dates. He had a bunch. They're all gone.
Oh, boy.
One last one. There is this nightmare that I think everybody's gone through this, where you've thrown something into the trash and then you realize, oh, this, I didn't mean to throw that into the trash. And then you just kind of take it as a loss, right? I mean, more times than not, you just say, okay, it's gone. But it's amazing how many stories, and we've talked to a couple different sanitation departments, one here in New York City, is what these sanitation workers will do to actually help you go find something you've thrown into the trash. And all comes down to what is a 30-minute window. This is what we found from a couple sanitation departments across the country. So here in New York, there is a Staten Island mom who threw away her pocketbook in the garbage can. And in it was some earrings that she'd gotten from her mother from the 1940s. She had a wallet, you know, so it had driver's license, credit cards, all kinds of stuff that, you know, any person would have in a purse. And so she realized it right away. The trash truck leaves the home maybe 15, 20 minutes. She realizes, oh, my God, purse, all my belongings in there. She calls the Department of Sanitation in New York. Within a really short window of time, they're able to figure out exactly which garbage truck has picked up her garbage. And so she's able to follow them and go to the sanitation site where this garbage truck is going to drop the garbage. And they hand her rubber gloves and they say, go for it. And even some sanitation workers in this case, they helped her go through bags of garbage. Within a couple minutes, actually, she was able to find her purse and retrieve it.
Wonderful.
We've heard stories, hundreds of them. There are hundreds of stories of people who've thrown out rings, engagement rings, wedding rings. And of course it has, it's not the monetary, of course, it's the sentimental value for the most part anyway. And so people want to find them. Again, I had a story out of Baltimore where this woman last year threw out her wedding ring and something else. They also were able to find it. But again, they say it's this short window because the garbage truck, of course, is on an assigned route, and they know what the assigned route is. You know, they know your address. They can put it all into the system. But once they've sort of circled through that route, it's almost impossible to go back and find it. They'll try if you want to, but in the case of that Staten Island woman, the woman in Baltimore, within a very short window of time, they knew that stuff was thrown out. But this, kudos to the sanitation department.
Absolutely.
Because they'll jump in there with them and help them find those lost items.
That's very nice. In my house, it would be a situation where my wife throws out something that I still need or want, and she thought was garbage. That's how that goes in our
house. I had my St. Pauli beer sign, the lit one that lit up. That was somehow threw up in the garbage. Yeah.
Now, my wife tells me yesterday, you had way too many socks, and I have thrown out some of your socks that had holes in them. Which one? Which pairs? I'm not going to tell you. And now I just keep wondering, is a pair of socks that I really like?
Or you haven't missed, like, I have a pair of, like, that has avocados on them, and they have a hole in them, but I like them because they have avocados on them.
Exactly.
My wife would throw them out, but I hide them.
Nobody's seeing the holes if you're wearing shoes.
It's in my shoe, right?
Thank you, Noam.
Sure.
And now you know the rest of the story.
You know, I got a nice compliment from Noam, and he entered. I happen to be wearing a sweatshirt, and so is Noam. It's not just any sweatshirt. It is a hooded sweatshirt that I got from the Other Side of Midnight online store. You could check that store out as well at store.othersideofmidnightshow.com. And I very rarely wear sweatshirts like this. I like this one because it's kind of a throwback to our radio station's logo from the 1980s, and it's vintage. I love it. And I just bought it, and I was leaving the house yesterday, and my wife says, "You never wear stuff like that. That's super casual." And I said, "Well, I like it. I don't have any cool stuff like this." And I realized that the reason I rarely wear a hooded sweatshirt, I'm not joking about this. By the way, I don't know why I've said that so many times today. Sometimes you get stuck on a phrase, and that's got to be the 10th time today that I've said I'm not joking. I don't know why, but whatever, it's stuck in my head. Anyway, so I really think the reason that I never wear a hooded sweatshirt is because now the popular way to refer to them is as a hoodie. And I hate the term hoodie. I despise the term hoodie as much as I hate the term selfie. And so I think on some subconscious level, I have been discriminating against clothing because of the common term hoodie. I had no problem buying this when it was listed as a hooded sweatshirt. But when people call it a hoodie, all of a sudden I'm not interested. So I'm going to try and take back the hooded sweatshirt as a fashion statement and put the word hoodie to the ash heap of history. We'll see. 15 seconds of fame straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight. Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
The Other Side of Midnight. What do you say we give you 15 seconds to say whatever you'd like? 800-848-9222.
The Other Side of Midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
Paul.
Jeffrey Deskovic was wrongfully convicted and exonerated for homicide. He's now an attorney who helps the wrongfully convicted at DeskovicFoundation.org. DeskovicFoundation.org. DeskovicFoundation.org.
Raji.
Your Curtis, instead of 24 hours in the WABC studio salivating to substitute for absentee hosts, please get out with the angels and fight crime in the streets of Gotham.
Mike.
Morning, Frank. When my rats
seem depressed, I put a transistor radio outside their cages and tune in the other side of Midnight Radio. When they hear your voice, smiles appear on their little rat faces. They're so happy they could probably swim the English Channel.
Russ.
Corinne Jean-Pierre tried to pivot off the real offense Nancy Mace took to George Stephanopoulos and extend faux outrage to a guy who's so demented he can't do his job. David either figuratively or literally can't see.
Lisa.
Happy birthday to your lovely wife and your aunt.
Thank you. Larry.
David was simply trying to gaslight your sense of propriety by patronizing you. You should have answered him by saying, I am Frank Morano and I have no sense of propriety.
Oh, Alfredo.
Frank, I disagree with Mary. You don't have a charming voice.
Oh, boy. All right, can't win them all, folks. Tomorrow, my hope is that Michael Smirkanish will be here, and obviously Brian Kilmeade will be here as well. Until then, Frank Morano, good day.